views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly Neff. This hit show will illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. Renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake to the greatest version of yourself. Learn to tap into your intuitions, think critically about our world, heal emotional and psychological wounds, and follow your passions to live your dreams. Each week, you'll learn how to navigate the global shift of consciousness and explore the deeper knowledge within. Welcome home. Now here's your host, Dr. Kelly Neff.
Hello, everyone. I am Dr. Kelly Neff, and you are listening to Lucid Planet Radio here on Transformation Talk Radio, WBLQ, CRN Digital Talk, Starcom Radio, and more. Before we start today, I just want to let you know I have a big announcement, very exciting news. After doing over 90 episodes of this show in the last 2 years, which I just want to say I had no idea what I was doing. I had never done radio before. I was a professor and a psychologist, and I could not be more grateful for all of the support that I've had from my loved ones, everyone working at Transformation Talk, our listeners, and of course, the amazing guests we've had and topics that we've been able to cover. But yeah, my big announcement is I'm changing things up a little bit, and it's all good. This is, you know, we are creative people and our creative ideas evolve. And so what I'm going to do is I'm taking Lucid Planet Radio off the air for the month of June 2017. And when we return on July 5th, we'll be coming back the first Wednesday of every month on KKNW Seattle, Starcom, et cetera, at a new time, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. And I'm doing this because I want to keep doing Lucid Planet. I love the show. I love what we've been able to accomplish here. But I also have ideas for something new that I'm doing. And, you know, sometimes you need to take a little bit of a step back to work, regroup, pour your heart and soul into something. So most notably, I am launching a brand new super hot show and working on a new book that I'm trying to get done all about sexual consciousness, love, relationships, sexuality, and you will be able to tune into the brand new show right here, here on Transformation Talk Radio. It's going to be Getting Lucky with Dr. Kelly, and we're going to talk about all of the things in love and sex that we want to manifest by creating our own luck and love. So it's going to be really fun. That's going to be on Wednesdays in the evenings, starting mid-July. And I'm going to be doing all live video stream on Facebook, YouTube, as well as the usual streaming services like iTunes and SoundCloud. And I was a professor of human sexuality for many years, and I have a lot to say and share on the topic. And remember, of course, all of my archive shows for Lucid Planet and all of my articles and all everything is still on lucidplanetradio.com. And you can still tune in for free to all 90 archive shows and the new shows, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, and follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram with Lucid Planet with Dr. Kelly. So that being said, big announcement, Lucid Planet Radio, we've always been about exploring themes of human evolution and culture. And I've picked topics that have been the most thought-provoking and inspiring to me, both as a psychologist, but also as a human being in a spiritual journey, but also living in this material world. And so in this vein, it seems very fitting today that we kind of return to the roots of where it all began and talk about the nature of consciousness and the origins of life. You know, what is consciousness? Where has it emerged from? You know, how can we tap into this? How did our ability to sense awareness and presence come into existence? And these are some really deep questions. Maybe there aren't concrete answers, but there are certainly theories. And one of the most fascinating theories is something that my guest today, Dr. Bruce Damer, is offering. And he is a multidisciplinary scientist, author, designer. I'm so excited to welcome back to the show And he is collaborating on a new model for the origin of life, the Hot Springs model, which I hope we get to talk about today. And he's developing a new approach to consciousness and the, quote, field of experience. And what's really cool about today's show is that he's giving a big plenary talk at the Science of Consciousness Conference in San Diego next week, the second week of June. So he and I kind of were chatting that this would be a great time to work out some of these ideas and give our audience a little preview of the talk. So without further ado, let's please welcome Dr. Bruce Damer to the show. Dr. Damer, it's been great to have you back.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Kelly. It's a pleasure to be here again.
Absolutely. So I'm so excited. Tell me about this conference that you're participating in. I see that you're speaking in between a few super heavy hitters in the area of consciousness science.
Yeah, it's a conference. It's usually sometimes referred as the Tucson Conference. Consciousness Conference was established by Stuart Hameroff 24 years ago. And it's really quite a remarkable meeting because they bring brain researchers, you know, people doing fMRI studies, and they bring meditators, and they bring spiritual leaders, and they bring people who are, you know, looking at drug profiles on consciousness. So it's like his idea was, do we actually have an idea of what consciousness is and how to study it scientifically or empirically or experientially? And it's been a mix of these people for 24 years, and this is the next one.
Wow. And it's in, but this one's in San Diego, right?
Yeah, at the Hyatt Regency La Jolla. I think it's where it's happening. And it's like 5 days. So it starts like June 5th, 6th, and goes through Saturday the 10th. And I'm speaking in the closing session on Saturday the 10th, right after Deepak Chopra and right before Stuart Hameroff.
Woo! Are you nervous or are you a little excited or both?
Well, I'm a novice to this. I mean, I study other things, but on the way to figuring out possibly how life began on Earth, it occurred to me one night, I went into one of my deep thought experiments, and it occurred to me I could ask the question, was it necessary for consciousness to exist as life was coming into being? Or did consciousness come out of life itself, you know? Because that's sort of a dividing line. There are those who think that the whole universe is conscious or atoms are conscious. And then there's the more materialist approach of, no, it grew up with us. It grew up with the biosphere, and it's a thing of the biosphere. So that's what I'm going to talk about in really cool little drawings and pictures. Mm-hmm. So it's just this pure download talk. It's not that science-y. I'll show our science, but it'll be pure philosophy.
Well, wouldn't you agree that when we talk about the hard problem of consciousness, that scientifically, objectively, it's very difficult to measure to begin with?
Yeah, in fact, you've hit the nail on the head, Kelly, because I'm going to use the metaphor of the blind man and the elephant.
You know, that sounds nice.
One of them finds the tail and thinks the elephant's a broom or a brush. The other one finds the trunk and thinks it's a hose. And the third one runs into the belly and thinks it's like a rock. and that's exactly the situation we've got. It's too big of a system to study, actually. And it throws us many, many views of it. And there's almost as many views of consciousness as there are humans that experience it. So I'm actually unwinding everything to the basic properties, and I can give you the three properties that
everything.
Oh, so the first one is like a little clock. What it does is it winds up and it makes things that are unlikely more likely. I call it a probability engine.
Okay.
So like the fact that we're talking today is super improbable, left on its own in the universe. It would never happen, but life made it happen.
True.
You know? So probability engine. The second thing is the connection engine, the connectome. And that's like what we're doing right now. We're talking. We're using language. But biology uses chemistry to send messages back and forth. And that's a super dense system. And then the third one is really cool. It's the memory patternome. And it's when things are stored in memory, like genetic codes or books or things like that, and that patterns the world. And everything comes from those three properties.
So do you think that these properties have always been in existence, or is this something that's unique to human evolution?
I think these properties come as soon as you get the first inklings of life. Life actually invents all three of those machines. The fourth machine is called the physics of the cosmos. But life invents those three cool little engines that run on the physics of the cosmos, and it cranks up, and it cranks up and throws off a lot of heat and chaos when it creates this kind of order and creates us, and it creates the biosphere. And here's the kicker. It creates something I call the field, just for the lack of a better term, the field, which is so big that us little monkeys with our instruments and our meditations and our however we do it, we're just beginning to sense the field. So one night in my thought experiment, the dream told me, don't put names on the field. It's too soon. It's too big of a system. You know, and it's huge. You're in it. You sense it. You're an instrument into it. You know, whether you're a meditator or you're a hardcore neuroscientist, you're all instruments into the same field, and the field generates all experience. So I'm calling it the field, and it's just all experience, really. And it can give you anything. It gives you any story you want, any model of the world you want, any vision that you want, but through the filters of the primate brain. You know, so a worm's experience of the field is different than ours.
And are we... Well, we're going to take a quick break, but I want to know when we come back, you know, are we sharing this field with all living things, or is it a human field and then there's an animal field? And, you know, do animals have a consciousness? That's something that we talk a lot about. Do animals have a soul? And of course, I'm such a dog lover that I can't imagine a world where I think they have more soul than we do.
Right.
But anyway, Bruce, this is so awesome. I'm like taking notes as we speak, and we're going to take a quick break out there. And when we come back here, Dr. Damer and I are going to talk more about the field of all experience and how to tap in to the field of all experience and really access these levels of emotion and consciousness that are out there. So stick with us and we will be right back.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
What is a brilliant culture, and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
Introducing the Lucid Planet, a digital gathering place featuring cutting-edge, high-vibrational content that will empower and inspire you to become the greatest version of yourself. Visit the Lucid Planet today to stimulate your mind, body, and soul as you connect with a global community of like-minded people. The Lucid Planet is edited by renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly Neff, who is here to help you cope with anxiety, connect to your higher purpose, uncover your true passions, and live your dreams. Dr. Kelly's fresh, compassionate perspective emphasizes growth, transformation, healing, and thriving, even in the face of adversity. Say goodbye to bad news and low vibrational media for good and become part of the larger collective of people working together to navigate the global shift of consciousness and transform the world from within. Join the planet, the Lucid Planet. Visit thelucidplanet.com. Welcome home. What if your body and mind were the compasses to the secrets, mysteries, and magic of life? Glenna Rice, co-host of The Questionable Parent, is inviting you to access all that is possible. Glenna is a 10-year certified veteran access consciousness facilitator who offers an amazing variety of life-changing classes and workshops. Work with Glenna from anywhere with teleclasses and workshops all over the globe. To learn more and see Glenna's current schedule of events, classes, and workshops, visit glennarice.com.
Tune in to the hit show, Mouthing Off with Chef Rossi. Chef Rossi mouths off about different subjects in pursuit of breaking down walls and opening up your minds. She and Dr. Pat banter back and forth, taking from the headlines of the day on subjects that reach beyond what goes on in the world into your hearts. And go to theragingskillet.com to find out more and let Chef Rossi know what's on your mind.
We are back on Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly, and my guest today is Dr. Bruce Damer, who is talking with us about the nature of consciousness, the origins of life. Before we continue, though, Bruce, I just want to make sure that everybody knows how to contact you to find out about your work, this talk you're doing at the Science of Consciousness, and then also you're just telling me during the break this incredible project you're doing at Symbiosis Eclipse in August as well.
Yeah. So this festival is amazing. It's under the path of the eclipse. There'll be like 30 to 40,000 people there in Oregon. And it's sold out, unfortunately, for some of your listeners.
Yeah.
We're doing a dance performance. I'm doing a spoken word performance about the meaning of eclipses through the last 10,000 years on probably the Sunday night. And I'm doing talks about space. We have space people. We've got huge number of bands and stages and yoga and fantastic vending. And it's the event to be at. It's, I think, co-organized by 9 festivals worldwide.
It is. We were just talking. It's probably the only thing I'm going to be at this year because I'm trying to work and focus the energy internally. But that event, you know, it's been, 99 years since the last total solar eclipse?
Yes.
In North America. And if you think about it, this is a tradition, indigenous tribal tradition of humanity for thousands of years, that these eclipses were very symbolic. And it's an immense time of change and transformation and kind of like an opening of a gateway. And of course, it was probably very scary for people back in the day when the sun went black. But this is something that is kind of inside of us, whether it's something we're really touching or if it's more in our kind of collective unconscious. So the fact that that many people are going to be gathering together outside for a week, to engage in all these types of experiences. There's a whole science and non-duality conference on site, right?
Yeah.
It's
gonna be an experiment on how far we can push everything, you know, and then the peak moment is 9 o'clock in the morning on Monday, August 21st. And my job the night before in our big eclipse show is to remind everyone, don't sleep through it.
Oh my gosh. You know? Seriously. And that's, I would have like at a festival, that's kind of prime sleep time, you know? So it's before it gets too hot to get you out of your tent.
That's it. You either stay up all night or listen for people screaming, like don't put your headphones on because you don't want to miss the eclipse.
They need like a siren, you know, like one of those tornado warnings, but an eclipse warning. So everyone gets up. Anyway, that's going to be really cool. And that's just, you know, something magical to think about. And yeah, it is technically sold out, but you know, there might still be opportunities to like volunteer. Yeah,
there's a lottery going on.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. Yeah. So, I mean, but yeah, that's going to be, and that's in Oregon. Mm-hmm. So if you're in the Northwest, I mean, it's, you know, it's worth it for the trip out. But anyway, enough about that. also, Bruce, you have a website, which is your name, I think.
Yes, it's damer.com, damer.com. And it has links to my podcast, The Levity Zone.
Yes.
And the TEDx talks, because I do work in spacecraft design and on origin of life chemistry, chemical models. And now, the thing that's going on now, which is very exciting since we talked last time, is I'm part of a landing site selection team for the next Mars rover,
Really?
Which is going to look for life on Mars. And in February, we did our pitch at a meeting of 250 people down near Jet Propulsion Lab. I made the first ever talk about the origin of life on Mars, how it would have happened, similar to on Earth, perhaps, in a hot spring environment. And then Mars started to die. That was the thing.
Yeah.
Venus boiled over, and Mars dried out and lost its atmosphere and got very cold. So if life started there, it had to find a refuge. It couldn't continue to evolve. It had to go underground as little microbes, nothing complex. So where you find it is in the old hot springs that might have brought fluids up, that would have brought the ancient life up to the surface. Wow. And so we're arguing the case to go back to a place called Columbia Hills, where there's this big rock outcrop that's actually an old Yellowstone, 3.7 billion year old Yellowstone on Mars. Yeah.
Wow. So do you think that there could still be life on Mars in these little outcroppings?
It's unlikely, because the surface is like almost a vacuum. It's high ultraviolet. It's super dry. So they think they see seeping water here and there, but I think the only shot is in the deep rocks, deep, hot, salty, wet rock underground. And so that's be hard to find, hard to find. You'd have to drill quite deep. And whether you manage to get, you'd have to send the sample back to Earth, which is a whole long process. So I think we went to Australia last summer and picked up rocks there that were 3.5 billion years old that have these funny ridges in them called stromatolites. Mm-hmm. And that's true. That's completely clear evidence for life. And those were found in a hot spring environment, preserved, there's no water flowing. And so that's the kind of thing we might be able to look for on Mars, is that exact rock texture. It's called a rock fabric.
While we're talking about Mars, I have more questions since, what is your take on, there's so much conspiracy theory stuff about Mars, and maybe it's always kind of been that way, that we like to hypothesize these crazy stories about other planets, but certainly there's this movement of, there's a face on Mars, there's a giant pyramid on Mars, people used to live there, maybe they came to Earth. Do you have thoughts on this, like from a scientific perspective?
Well, it's all stories from people's imaginations. So every generation, there's a few of these stories pop out. And I think people have written their PhD theses on the stories from the 1920s, was Percival Lowell and whether they saw canals on Mars. So that led to the War of the Worlds, with Orson Welles' radio show. So it's popular entertainment, but none of it has any, there's no credibility to any of it.
Mm-hmm. So the whole thing with the face, is it just like coincidental that it just maybe rocks?
I was on the phone with Art Bell one night because I was getting ready to go on the show, and the face on Mars was debunked. Because Art was looking at NASA orbital imagery of that rock outcrop, and he said, "Oh, I got to get Hoagland back on the show because obviously it's not a face. It's just what you're reading into the shadows of a fuzzy picture of rocks." And so I said, "Art, you get them going up and coming down, don't you?" And he said, "Yeah, that's the name of the game."
Yes,
so Art Bell or George Norrie or all these people—they build these people up that have these nonsense ideas, and then they take them down, so they get twice the airtime.
That's kind of the way that it goes, but it's like our society that we want this kind of entertainment, something about our human psyche. Like, we like the weird, wonderful, we like believing, and then we like destroying.
First it gets dangerous with this new fake news trend, where we have leadership giving us fake news, right? And purposeless.
It's hard to know what's real and what's not, honestly. You got to do your own. Well, and as scientists, we know it's all about fact-checking, and it's all about actually checking your sources. So you kind of have to do that now.
And Americans are incredibly gullible. So I'm from Canada. If you go to Canada, the people are they're sort of born skeptics. Norway or Denmark or these other countries, other societies, people just won't believe everything they're told. Whereas here, for some whatever reason, Americans have become incredibly mushy and gullible. They'll believe stuff, but other societies don't.
Sugar and crap in our water and food.
Yeah.
You know, makes you wonder, doesn't it?
My Canadian relatives asked me, because there's a story in the New Yorker and I on whether or not the American Revolution was actually a good idea, because the story was called We Could All Be Canada.
You know, oh my gosh.
And they're talking about the radical Whigs that took over and created this kind of weird political system with a charismatic political thing and sloganeering and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they're arguing that if the American Revolution hadn't happened, it would have been a safer, sort of saner world. And I wrote a letter to the New Yorker saying, my Canadian relatives always say, why did you move to a country full of crazy people? And I said, I moved here because it's full of crazy people and they do some cool things, including... We walked on the moon and we Google today if because of the crazy people, we would never have had that. So
we know. Are the, I mean, I kind of agree. You know, I used to think I needed to get out of here, but actually I think I'm in the right place.
Well, you need to pick the right place in the right place, because there's plenty of, as my Canadian relatives had warned, like, you've got to be really careful where you go in the U.S. because there's no like uniform standards of conduct.
Yeah.
Or.
No,
there's no civil society, so you have to. So that's why I picked the Redwood Forest here next to Santa Cruz. It's kind of the most sane place I could find.
Ah, oh, so beautiful. Yeah, you can't really go wrong. I'm in Colorado. It's pretty good. I mean, it's interesting.
Pretty good there.
Yeah. It's pretty good, but it's interesting because it's especially Denver is a city in flux. You know, everything's changing and there's people coming. It's becoming like the most cosmopolitan city in the U.S. It's really strange. People are coming from everywhere. Every single license plate is from some random out of state. Like yesterday I saw Alabama. I saw an Arkansas. I saw Michigan, California, Texas, just literally driving for 2 minutes in my hood.
And it's not all because of legal weed?
I mean, that's what I thought. But what's happening is tech. Tech is, Google's moved its whole headquarters here to Denver and Boulder, apparently. And so we're getting this like tech influx. And I think that it is related to the legal weed. But I mean, let's face it, when California gets legal weed or recreational next January, that's going to blow up just as much, if not way more. So, I mean, we'll see what happens to Denver. But I mean, we've got, it's just nuts. So, but I totally agree with you, you know, and maybe we're going to take a break and we'll segue this back to consciousness and the idea of like these different realities that we live in. And can we have a universal reality? Because I think America is a great example of that. Every single person is experiencing things differently, right?
Yep.
So on that note, Dr. Damer and I will be right back after this short break. And we'll talk more about consciousness and the origins of life and maybe a little bit more about Mars and outer space. So stick with us. If you're in the U.S., we love you. And Canada. See you in a second.
If you're dealing with fear and anxiety, you've probably noticed that the more you fight these emotions, the stronger they seem to get. Dr. Friedemann Schaub, the author of The Fear and Anxiety Solution, explains that instead of suppressing, we need to identify and resolve the deeper, subconscious root causes of fear and anxiety. His personal breakthrough program has helped thousands worldwide to overcome their emotional challenges. To learn more, visit thefearandanxietysolution.com and schedule your free consultation with Dr. Schaub now.
Are you ready to thread your life with intuition? Intuit Apparel can help you do just that. This is not just about a piece of clothing. This is about a movement, an awakening, and staying centered in life. Your life. Intuitive and host of the radio show Get Into It, Lynn Brown, was given this image with the intention of a clothing line designed to represent the essence of life itself. Visit intuitapparel.com now and wear your intuition with pride.
You, yes you, can be the highest version of yourself. Wellness coach and natural beauty expert Dr. Agnes Renkel is on a mission to help you play the game of your life. Win in vibrancy, health, and beauty. Because you deserve it. Dr. Agnes goes beyond the limits in her personal coaching sessions to revolutionize health and wellness. Now is the time to unleash your true power. For more information, visit DrAgnesFrankel.com.
Tune in to the Psychic Professors Show, the Voices of Spirit Radio, with international medium and spirit artist Dr. Susan Barnes on Transformation Talk Radio, featuring a variety of spiritual topics such as psychic art, spiritualism, EVP, psychic development, and mediumship. This hit call-in show provides listeners with breakthrough wisdom to enliven and enlighten their lives. Visit spiritartgallery.net for show days and times.
Tune in to Mainstream Metaphysics Radio to harness your connection with the universe to effect change for optimal success and happiness. Named one of the country's top psychics, Eve now brings her insights and gifts to this weekly hit call-in show, joined by visionaries, leaders, and gifted others, but mostly you. Jot it down, Thursdays, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Miss any shows during the week?
No!
Don't worry, we've got you covered.
Yahoo!
With the free Transformation Talk Radio app, you'll have access to all of the past week's shows in the palm of your hand.
Yes!
Tune in to Transformation Talk Radio anywhere you go with our free app for any of your devices. Check out our app in the App Store and Google Play Store today.
We are back on Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly, and I have Dr. Bruce Damer here talking with us about human consciousness and the origins of life. And if you're just tuning in, we've been alluding to this idea of consciousness and kind of the creation of experiences and how we all see our reality kind of subjectively, but maybe there is some kind of universal field that creates all of our experience that we're all tapping into. Did I get that right, Bruce?
So what I'm proposing to the community that studies consciousness is that just, in a sense, cast your horizons a lot higher, i.e. that there's a big super system that creates all experience. You talked about it in a kind of beautiful way before the break. That super system is something we're just vaguely sensing now, both with instruments and with our own minds and bodies and hearts. And we shouldn't be in a rush to figure out, to consider that we can name things and, you know, do taxonomies and figure it out. Because we're at step one, we're like coming to the first hill at the foothills of the Himalayas. You know, we're just there. And that's what the deep dream told me to tell the people, like, tell them not to name things now. You're just starting. You're just starting out. It's a very big system. So what I'm bringing to them is this idea, if we understand how you rewind life back to the beginning, back to the beginning of the very tape of life, you know, the first moments of life, you can actually watch the boot up sequence. You can watch the properties and the little processes begin. And then you realize, that's all there is. It's just those three things, the probability engine, the connecting thing, and the memory thing. And that everything is built out of the interactions of those three little characters. And so you scale it up, and it scales up huge, and it creates this massive thing called the field, which is bigger than us, certainly bigger than our consciousness. And our consciousness is just little sensation into that field. And so is a worm's consciousness. And so is everything else. And the field is so large, it can generate an infinite variety of things, from fake news to testable scientific models to the iPhone. You know, it's huge. It's freaking huge. And we should all sort of, in a sense, bow down to the field and say, thank you for giving us all experience. And may we not mislead ourselves by misinterpreting. You know, and here's the last words I'll say to the audience, and you're getting a preview here, is field generates everything, but we have a choice to make it into stories that separate ourselves from others or separate ourselves from the planet, from the world. Yeah. And if we make stories of separation, you know, we We cast aspersions between groups. We create fear. We create unconscious kind of usury, of destruction of the natural world. These are not helpful things coming from the field, because it will impact on whether we're even here in the future to sense and be part of this thing. So it's just rather comes down to the quality of what we build in our minds and our bodies from this gigantic thing that's feeding us constantly.
I think that's so important, because it also does give us some level, I don't know, free will, I guess, is a good way that we can work with the tools that we have. We can work with what we're downloading. We can work with what's around us and available to us probabilistically. Our lives are not defined by these options, but rather we can work within those options. And I think that's really important. And I wonder if we can ever really truly pinpoint where the field is or where consciousness lives.
I think we can't. And by asking the question, the very question about consciousness being in our brain case or it being spread out, we're listening to the advice of the field saying, don't name things and label them, just experience.
Yes.
You know, maybe we can't. We can't even ask the question. Because so, if we're limiting ourselves by our perceived question and our perceived answers.
Part of it is breaking out of the old paradigms of science. You know, obviously in psychology, certainly in the last 100 years, it's only barely started to be accepted that consciousness may not be created in the brain, right? I mean, that was pretty much that was the answer, even, you know, all through behaviorism and everything. You know, consciousness is created by the brain, and when the brain dies, consciousness dies. And then we're slowly seeing that that's not necessarily the case. So my question for you is, how do you feel about a lot of this newer research coming out showing, or trying to show, and certainly people's accounts, that consciousness continues to live on even after that person dies? Their consciousness still exists somewhere.
You know, that's not in my department at all, but I'm sure at this meeting I'll be able to hear people that are really way out on that limb.
I would really like to know, because I've had Dr. Eben Alexander on the show a couple of times, for example. If you know his, he's the neurosurgeon who was brain dead and then came back, and he's like very sure that consciousness does not exist in the brain and that it continues to live on. But it's hard when you haven't had that experience yourself.
Maybe that he's uniquely set up to have that vision.
Absolutely.
And that understanding constructed for him.
Absolutely.
Whereas another person wouldn't, you know.
Absolutely. The other thing that I wanted to bring up is, you've mentioned your deep thought experiments. And I'd love for you to share a little bit about what that means, because that also seems like a way to kind of tap in more to the capabilities of the larger field.
Yeah, anyone could do this, and we all do it. So, for instance, if you go to a great movie or you read a great novel you can't put down, your mind is constructing a fantastical world around that. And when you're a little kid and you're playing Airplane or you're playing house or whatever, you're in a sense almost like a psychedelic experience when you're little kids are always in that. When I was little and I would have a very active day and I would go to bed, I close my eyes and there's all these visuals going on. And I didn't know where they came from. It was not just colors, but even faces and things. And it was being painted on my closed eyelids. It was so beautiful. And that's when I decided at that time to keep that going. That was more interesting than TV, which was black and white, you know, at the time. And so I had learned tricks and techniques to keep those worlds going, so that when I was bored in junior high school, I could go into those worlds, just like fully entertained, you know, for hours at a time. And that's how I've done all my work of designs for NASA and virtual worlds and working on this origin of life question, because I could go into these imaginal thing. Einstein called them thought experiments, you know, or Gedanken experiment. Gedanken experiments. And so in some sense, all the great breakthroughs in science were made in this sort of mystical way of opening yourself to an imaginal world that is rich, you know, and you know, Descartes' visions, Newton's, Crick's understanding of the structure of DNA, things mm-hmm. like that. They came through, in a sense, visionary downloads. These people yes. wouldn't call them woo because they ended up being very mm-hmm. grounded. But maybe they were just asking the field for solutions.
The dream state too is
the dream state. Yeah.
Just, I mean, and what you're talking about is almost like a waking dream or a deep meditation, theta waves, whatever you want to call it. But certainly there's been even scientific discoveries that have happened in dreams. And, it's just fascinating to me because I'm an active meditator, active dreamer, especially I used to have the same kind of thing that you were talking about as a kid, where I'd see all these weird things. I couldn't sleep because I'd like hear things all night long and it sounded crazy. But now I have a lot more of, I guess, control over it, I would say. But I have these dreams where a lot of the time, and I think I'm like, I must be a sign of psychosis. I can't tell sometimes if what I dreamed actually happened or if it was a dream because there's so much detail and information and what I dream ends up happening a lot of the time, not in this like exact way, but these little, there'll be themes and symbols that will pop up. And I'll be like, oh, okay, I got that now. I see why that was there. I'm very grateful for that dream world. And people often ask to be coached in how to do that. And I don't really know what to tell them.
Yeah, I think there's, I know people who do lucid dreaming coaching. And if you can actually eat certain foods and it'll actually encourage lucid dreaming. And I think that's the next wave of tools of how to use the dream state for all kinds of things. Now, being forewarned that dreams can also just lead you down into story and into separation and isolation. So if a dream terrifies you, you may stop talking to your dog or your family or whatever. And it's garbage in, garbage out, or it's the predilection of who you are as a person is going to predispose you for how you interpret things. And you have to be almost... This is what I would describe. Ram Dass describes this, where you become separate from yourself. This is sometimes called the Atman, where you're a separate observer. Just you're the wisest little observer ball, and you can watch all this stuff going down. And then you can be a little skeptical, like a fake news. You can be a skeptical of fake self, because your systems can do all kinds of things, and the ultimate little observer Atman can I don't think we'll go there kind of thing. And that could be very healthy to bring that to where you're not so attached to the outcomes.
I think that's really important because you can't always trust yourself. That's true, right?
You can't always.
because like you said, garbage in, garbage out. There's so much crazy stimulation and a lot of kind of nasty stuff in the world sometimes that it can imprint upon us. And then when it plays out, that doesn't mean that's authentically ours. Like a lot of us too, people are very empathic, very sensitive. They don't necessarily know that they are. And I can't tell you how many people I've spoken to just even in my psychology work where they're feeling emotions that aren't actually theirs and they don't know. And then they realize like, oh, well, my mom is actually feeling this way or someone else that I just talked to. And
so exactly. Yeah. They're coupling into it.
Almost have to be vigilant. Yeah.
And I've done 2 years of training with a group called the Luminous Awareness Institute here in Santa Cruz. And 75 of us have gone through this very intensive thing where each module we work on a different trauma. So Eckhart Tolle talks about the pain body in the 90s, but there's many pain bodies and there are many character styles. So there's traumas that create hysteric responses, rigid responses, psychopath responses. And so each of our modules, we focus on one particular trauma. And these are all held in the body. They're not reachable with talk therapy, and they're actually not even reachable with drugs. They're reachable with body release, somatic work, energetic somatic work. And this is the frontier, but it works. I've watched over 2 years, people go through complete release and integration of deeply held trauma, and they're different. And so it's just heartening to see that we're finding the tools to work on this stuff now.
I totally agree. And it's amazing. I've done some of this work myself as a participant. And it's kind of incredible how I'm a psychologist, but I'm not really into the talk therapy thing at all because it's just playing the program over and over again, you know?
Yep.
You got to get behind it. Like I had Bruce Lipton on the show talking about how, you know, you have to hack into the program using kind of like these undercover somatic techniques.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or it just keeps running. And so do you think about this more and more? It does seem like people, maybe we're diverging. Maybe it's always been like this. People really want healing. People are pursuing their own healing at what seems to me to be an accelerated rate.
Yeah. As society gets more traumatic, right? If people are like Americans are in a state of PTSD all the time now,
yes.
At the same time, people are in record numbers pursuing deep, self-responsible internal somatic type healings, and it's the huge trend that didn't exist say 20 years ago or 30 years ago. People didn't have a clue. They were just going to their shrink, you know, or they were taking, you know, some kind of pharmaceutical. They didn't have a clue, and we didn't as a society have a clue how to work on deep traumas that we do now. And this is the greatest opening of the 21st century. It's greater than any technology is this work.
I love that. So how do you think that affects, do you think that can in turn affect the field of consciousness of what's available?
Yeah, I think it's actually going to release us. So say for instance, if you watch people go through these healings, you know, poor, Robin Williams, right?
Oh, yeah.
He had deep trauma, but it made him a genius as a comic and an actor and a director. But the trauma got him in the end, right?
Yeah.
In a way. I mean, he became ill as well, but I met him several times and you could feel his incredible discomfort and trauma.
Oh.
And I felt really sorry for him because there were no tools available for him to allow him to release what happened when he was a little boy. You know, you could see it in his face. You could almost guess what happened to Robin Williams, you know, and it created this imprint. I just felt terrible. And when he took his own life, I just felt terrible because I knew that, you know, there were people now that could have helped him become very healthy. But it was too soon. It was too soon. Yeah. It's like we didn't know that salt could cause blood pressure and heart attacks and people died of heart attacks because they put too much salt on their food. It's the same kind of a thing. And so when we heal the trauma, we get what you might think of as a superpower. So somebody who was a rigid kind of controlling personality type because of a trauma when they were young becomes a great accountant or a CFO or something. Mm-hmm. But when they heal that, they become a magnificent CFO where they're not so tied to the numbers. But they can see everything in the field. They can see all the numbers, the finances of the organization, but they're not rigid about it anymore because they're healed. And so they're like the best CFO that ever existed. You know, the superpower comes out. Yeah.
And that's kind of what we're all hopefully evolving into is superhumans. I think that in a weird kind of karmic way, almost everybody has some level of trauma, I would argue. And so... But in some cases, there's a resilience that happens. And like you said, people bounce back, a release, and they become even greater because of the struggles that they've been through. And then other people, it like crushes and destroys them, and they can never get it together. What is the factor that would distinguish that?
What really distinguishes it is self-knowing. So, for instance, if you're very attached to when you start screaming at somebody, because, say, for instance, you were screamed at when you were five all the time because the family was crazy. If you strongly attach to screaming at people as your release and your healing, you'll never heal it. Whereas if you hold yourself apart and you're horrified when you see that traumatized protector come out and scream at somebody, and then you admit it to people, it's like being in AA, right? You admit it and say, "I'm terribly sorry. This is what happened when I was younger," and it's just automatic. And then you get empathy from people like, "Oh my God, let's give you a hug." Mm-hmm. Well, now you're at the stage where you can get help, right? So it's really self-knowing and basically taking responsibility. And now there are tools and people that can, and you can't do this alone. You cannot heal it. And it's in the body. It's not, it literally, when you hit these traumas and these protectors, your body just starts to move, because sometimes it was installed in you before you were verbal, for goodness sake. So any amount of talk, just, as you said, reruns the program. But when the body starts to do its rippling release, and this is what the shamans of old were knew, and the healing women knew, that when the person's body started to move, the poltergeist or the possession would come out of them. And this was incredible technology in the 10th century or whenever, before it was extinguished by the church authorities. It was a technology of release of possession. And it wasn't the devil. It was the release of trauma. And that... it was a tool that people had, and it's a tool we're now returning to.
I'm curious about that, because there's been so much talk, especially lately, about ayahuasca, iboga, all of these like shamanic plant medicines, and people frequently talk about entities and having entities either within them or attached to them. So do you feel that really that's more of a metaphorical idea of the fact that there's pain and trauma in the body versus an actual literal entity?
I think that it's so large. So for instance, somebody in the state of ayahuasca has extra DMT in their system. And DMT is, as we know, is connected to dreams. It's connected to really high connectivity. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the tools of sensing and becoming an instrument into the bigger field. And beyond that, we really can't say much. I mean, in a sense, the demons or goddesses or spacecraft aliens that people encounter are incredible. They're outside people's experience. They're outside of their training and books they've read and things like this.
Totally.
And what I'm going to suggest to the conference in La Jolla is, this is a huge system, and how that comes into our consciousness, how those imagery and how those entities are met, we're just starting to even ask the questions of where they come from. And we really can't answer or even
we
ask
can't.
Questions. All we need to do as a species is say, it's open to us, let's go through the door, and let's systematically and lovingly and carefully explore this space and make a record, start making maps of this space.
I love that. I mean, I had Graham St. John on the show last year, and he wrote the book Mystery School in Hyperspace, A Cultural History of DMT. Mm. And he talks about all of the different possible explanations for the DMT and ayahuasca entities. And basically, I mean, people think they could be, you know, there's the psychological component, which is these are representations of our psyche. But then there's also like time travelers from the future, our dead loved ones, all this crazy stuff, another universe on top of us. Mm-hmm. And I've been thinking about that a lot lately, and I know we're almost out of time, but quantum computing, CERN, all of this talk about, you know, evidence of parallel universes. Mm-hmm. Is it possible that there is a parallel version of us interacting just outside of the realm of our perception?
I think we do ourselves a disservice when we come up with these labels, because in 50 years or 20 years, when we think back to the labels we were trying to put on things, we'll just laugh, right? Because it's mm-hmm. like, oh, that's so early 21st century, the describing this way. So in fact, we can't label, we can't name these things and be taken seriously in our futures. So I think we just have to experience and lovingly and carefully chronicle this, but don't try to understand it that much yet. It's too big.
Gosh. I love that. It's just so in my nature, and I think human nature, to try to find. We need the answer, but you're right. You know, as me and my friends always say, shout out to my Denver squad, experiencing the experience. That's that's what it's all about.
That's it.
Ben, Cody, Annie, experiencing the experience. Sorry, that's like our thing. So
like
I totally
wise friends. Yeah.
They are. On that note, thank you so much to my guest today, Dr. Bruce Damer, for sharing such awesome information. I hope to have you back on soon in the future, and please, guys, if you're in La Jolla, check out the Science of Consciousness Conference next weekend, June 7th to the 10th. Sounds amazing. And also Symbiosis Eclipse in August. Hopefully we will get to connect there, Bruce.
Yes, yes.
And just a quick reminder, Lucid Planet Radio will be off the air in June, but returning July 5th at 10 a.m. Pacific time. And stay tuned for the launch of my new sex and relationship show as well. And on that note, thank you again, Bruce.
You're welcome.
Light and love, everyone. Stay conscious, stay woke, and experience the experience. Have a great rest of your day. Bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the hit show, Lucid Planet Radio, with renowned psychologist and author, Dr. Kelly Neff. Tune in each week as we illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. This hit show will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake up to the greatest version of yourself. Learn how to navigate the global shift of consciousness as you explore the deeper knowledge, passion, and purpose within. Visit lucidplanetradio.com for upcoming show topics and to contact Dr. Kelly.